couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Vivarium, Banana Split, and the TV series Little Fires Everywhere and Baghdad Central. I'm also going to be talking about the news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring 1917 and Frankenstein, the true story. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/Kevin Carr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
First piece of news, I want to welcome a new affiliate, and that is 1480 WLEA in Hornell, New York, which is up in the Finger Lake region. The program will be airing on Saturdays from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and it is starting this weekend, so if you're up there in the Finger Lakes, you can turn your crank to 1480 WLEA and hear me. And if you're hearing me right now on WLEA, you've done a good job and found the right station. The next piece of news I want to hit is a sad piece of news, and that is we lost Stuart Gordon. Rest in peace. He died this week at age 72. Now, he's not like a big mainstream director. He's a bit of a cult director. I know him from being a fan of horror movies for years. He's best known for directing Reanimator, which is based on a series of H.P. Lovecraft stories that has nothing to do with the Cthulhu mythos, which is what H.P. Lovecraft is most well known for. But Reanimator was sort of like the original zombie story. I've read some of the original works that this is based on, and it's just, it's kind of maddening, bizarre stuff, which is everything you get from H.P. Lovecraft, but it's kind of the original zombie story in terms of that zombie that attacks people. And Jeffrey Combs, who has had a career here and there throughout TV and movies, he got his start with, probably got prominently noticed with the Reanimator movies. And he's not a fan. Jeffrey Combs isn't really a fan of horror movies, but he's well known in horror circles because of this. Stuart Gordon also had a spot on Masters of Horror. He did another H.P. Lovecraft adaptation in the 90s called Dagon. And of course, he did this Full Moon movie called The Pit and the Pendulum, which actually is a pretty good adaptation of the old Edgar Allan Poe story. I do have a bone to pick with Stuart Gordon. I would go to these 24-hour movie marathons ever since I was a teenager, and he was at one when I was in college, and I think he showed Bride of Reanimator, but then he came back to one that was somewhere in about 10 or 12 years ago. And he brought the movie Irreversible because he wanted people to watch it. And I don't forgive him for that because that movie's terrible. But it certainly achieves horror by making it uncomfortable to watch. But this guy was kind of a giant in horror films and had quite a career in sort of the fringe. So it's sad to see him go. The next piece of news involves things moving around the schedule. Of course, Wonder Woman 1984 has been moved away from its June opening due to the coronavirus burning its way through America right now and the world. That's been moved to August, and I find that interesting because I think this is going to shift the big push for blockbuster films later in the year. We're going to have a very interesting fall if this coronavirus thing can get under wraps. And things can kind of be open for business for everything regular by the end of the summer. This is going to make a real interesting last like 4 months of the year because they're going to cram a bunch of big releases in odd time frames. August has recently had some big releases like the Guardians of the Galaxy movie or Suicide Squad or even Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles about 10 years ago. But the fact that they're putting like one of their tentpole releases in August, at least staking a claim there right now, you might see a record-breaking August in terms of box office, just because I know people, once a lot of the restrictions are lifted, and don't get me wrong, they need to have their way to work through the system until this virus is licked, and then we can open things up. Let's not be the mayor from Jaws, people. Let's not try to open the beaches by 4th of July just so the Kitner boy can get eaten by the shark. Let's close things down. It's like when you're sick. If you get strep throat, even if you get strep throat right before you take vacation, you just got to take that week off. get on your antibiotics, rest, recover, and then go back to work. If you go back to work too soon, all you're going to do is get a flare up of the disease. You're going to spread it to other people. You got to cut all this out. And so by the time, hopefully by mid to late summer, everything's done. And then Wonder Woman 1984 can be a big hit and we can get back to normal in this country. But we have to take the time to do that. We have to do what's right before we jump back in and start giving the virus time to thrive. So hopefully that'll be wrapped up in time for that to come out in August. Right now, there's other things that are hitting streaming. Sonic the Hedgehog and Call of the Wild are now on streaming. I don't know if Call of the Wild, when that's going to show up on Disney Plus, but you know, those are the updates in terms of things happening in the movie world. Clearly Hollywood, if you follow Hollywood's view of this, They're kind of writing off the summer at this point. And I think that's realistic. And that's unfortunate, and it's going to hit the economy tough. But this is what we got to do. You know, let's hunker down. Let's stay at home. Let's get through this. We will get through this. We are at a unique time in our world. We are a unique time in history where we can stay at home and not get bored. There's plenty of stuff to watch on demand and streaming. So yes, stay safe and keep others safe. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is The Lost Husband. Supposedly it comes out on April 10th. That's at least what IMDb says. I don't know if that's true because I went to the studio site and they don't have a release date. But anyways, The Lost Husband, starring Leslie Bibb and Josh Duhamel, is a new trailer out this week.
I had to get out of my mom's place. My husband's gone. And I lost her house.
What do we call her?
Aunt Jean.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're always welcome here.
This is James O'Connor. He's gonna teach your mama how to run the farm.
What?
All right, 2 minutes out in the barn.
Where?
It's a big red structure out back.
I'm not sure I'm the farming type.
I would agree with that.
I am not cut out for this.
You're late.
No, I'm not. I just heard the rooster.
He's a rooster. Roosters can't tell time.
Okay, this looks terrible. Mainly because it's not my cup of tea. This looks like a Nicholas Sparks type movie. In fact, I think they actually, in the trailer, you couldn't see this because it's the radio, but they use the font in the titling and the messaging that looks like the font that they use for Nicholas Sparks movies. I mean, this looks terrible and cheesy and awful, but you know, the crowd that loves these kind of things are probably going to be happy to see it. This is a great example of a movie that doesn't have to come into theaters. This is a great example of a movie that is going to work perfectly fine on demand and streaming and might actually do better with a single push instead of a staggered 1-2 punch of splitting your marketing between a theatrical release and an at-home release. The next one I want to hit is The Willoughbys, which is coming straight to your TVs on April 22nd from Netflix.
All the Willoughby children ever wanted was to have a normal family. But their loving parents had no love left over for them.
Our parents are the worst. Just think about how great our family could be if they were gone.
How do you propose we discard of two insidious grown-ups?
So that's why the Willoughby children...
We shall craft a dangerous adventure.
...are sending their parents on a trip... to die for.
Ghastly!
Ruthless!
See the world.
No children allowed!
We did it!
We are free!
You know, this looks kind of clever. This looks sardonic and humorous, and it looks like it's got a lot of dark comedy to it. The animation is a little rudimentary when you compare it to something like Pixar and the kind of stuff that they're doing. So I'm okay with that. I don't mind them scaling back the quality of animation and getting sort of late 90s, early 2000 level of animation as long as it's a clever movie. The trailer for this looks funny. This movie looks like it might be a lot of fun. I'm actually kind of looking forward to it. I want to have a chance to check it out, and hopefully in a couple weeks I'll be talking about this for a review on the site. But yeah, this one caught my eye, so looking forward to this one. And that is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about some new films on demand, including Vivarium and Banana Split.
Oh!
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews. And let's talk about Vivarium. A young couple is searching for a new home, and they visit an eerie subdivision where they find themselves trapped and forced to raise a bizarre alien-like baby.
Welcome to Yonder, a wonderful development. It has all you'd need and all you'd want.
No. It's not exactly what we're looking for.
That guy was so strange.
Yeah. Wait. No, I don't think this is the right way.
What's happening? Maybe they'll let us go.
What if they don't come?
What's funny about this film is it kind of came out of nowhere for me. What happened was once the lockdown happened, particularly in Ohio, because I live in Ohio, I live in Columbus, dead center in the middle of the state. And I think that Governor DeWine and Dr. Amy Acton are doing a bang up job. It's tough to tell people to say, no, you have to stay home. No, you can't have big gatherings. No, you can't have movie theaters open. No, you can't have restaurants open. These are tough decisions. And I think the governor of Ohio, Mike DeWine, and the Department of Health, Dr. Amy Acton, they're doing a fantastic job and doing the appropriate thing. They are locking things down. But when this happened, of course, I didn't know what was going to happen with my job here, because I'm like, oh, am I going to be able to cover stuff? And so one of the first things I did when I realized they were shutting stuff down, and of course, even also with some proactive measures from AMC Theaters and Cinemark and Regal and shutting down the theaters, there's nothing going on in the movies. So I said, well, there's tons of stuff on demand. So, of course, I reached out to my streaming contacts, people at Hulu and Netflix and Amazon. But also, I there's a lot of smaller movies that come out on demand every year, every week. And I found some of those press agents. It's a great opportunity if you happen to have a movie that's coming out on demand. Gosh, you know, this is the time to promote it. And so I just said, okay, what's coming out? And I started to build up my schedule of what to cover, you know, so I could actually talk about movies and not just talk about old ones. And one of these was Vivarium. I said, oh, this looks like interesting, a little science fiction-y kind of thing. And I started watching it, and doggone it if I wasn't just sucked in. Now, what's funny is it stars Imogen Poots, who I've seen some stuff I've really liked her in, some things I'm like, yeah, she's okay. I think she's a fine actress. She's attractive. She has a certain range. But the other person in it is Jesse Eisenberg, who does not have range. Jesse Eisenberg is a one-note actor. And if I were ever a director, I'd love to put him in something and say, I want you to not be Jesse Eisenberg. And for once in your life, don't be the Mark Zuckerberg, Lex Luthor hybrid that you are in every movie that you do. But I do think that they dial him back on his tics and his nervous delivery and sort of his Jeff Goldblum style of moving his hands in this movie. And so I that's the first thing I noticed, is he was playing not completely against type, but a little bit against type. And the movie starts out as somewhat mundane, but then it takes a really bizarre turn. And it takes a real Twilight Zone turn, to the point that I was talking to a radio colleague of mine and about this movie this week, and he was like, well, there's like two or three Twilight Zone episodes that this reminds me of. And I'm like, absolutely it does. I just watched all the Twilight Zone episodes last year, you know, and I'm like, oh, yeah, certainly this one and that one and this one. And the whole point is they end up in the subdivision, and it's bizarre and ersatz and secluding. They're the only ones there that they know of, and it just seems to go on forever. They seem to be almost in this matrix, and they can't escape. And they're given their food, but it doesn't have any taste to it. They're given this baby in a box that shows up, and they have to raise the baby, and the baby's weird and bizarre, and it doesn't act like a normal human. That's why I say it's kind of like an alien baby. And it does put you in a very, what would you do in that situation? And, you know, the for example, the woman resisting being referred to as mother. She doesn't like to be called mother because she's like, I'm not your mother because you're so weird. But there's a certain affinity they get to just because they're supposed to take care of the child, but they also resent it. And there's layers to this where you can say, well, you know, maybe this is an allegory for parenting. This is an allegory for parenting a challenging or difficult child, or a child with special needs that may not act normal. I think this has a lot to dissect. I've said this going back for other movies, in particular, like The Lighthouse last year. There are movies that are not just about what's on the surface. The Lighthouse is not just about two guys going crazy in a lighthouse. There's subtext there. And this is not just a movie about two people stuck in this matrix-like world of trying to raise this alien child. there's something else to it. And I find that fascinating. And I think that's something that you can deconstruct here. But you could also make it as just, this is also just kind of a cool little Twilight Zone type movie. And it does have a point and it does have a direction. It does follow through to get somewhere, but it doesn't give you all the answers. In a lot of ways, this reminds me of the early work of Denis Villeneuve with stuff like Enemy. If you remember that movie with Jake Gyllenhaal, where there was a doppelganger of his, you know, where it was almost real, but not quite. It was, and that's where it's, you know, dips into that other dimension of Twilight Zone. So yeah, I had a blast watching this one. I thought this was fascinating, a really great movie. Check it out. Search it out. Vivarium totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next one I want to talk about is Banana Split. Not the Banana Splits. The Banana Splits was that old cartoony kind of kid show that they made into a horror movie last year. No, Banana Split, a girl heading to college breaks up with her boyfriend and forges an unlikely friendship with his new girlfriend.
She's allowed to be depressed.
Thank you.
No one as good as Nick will ever love her again.
Where did this Clara girl come from anyway?
She's here.
How come I've never heard of her?
She's like moved here, so I'm just showing her around.
Hi. You're April.
Uh-huh.
Do you want to go do a shot?
Why are you being so nice to me?
I want a reason to give you a black eye.
I think we should make some rules. I concur.
What's weird about this one is it's billed as a Dylan Sprouse movie. If you don't know who Dylan Sprouse is, he is one of the two twins of Dylan and Cole Sprouse. I think they were originally in Big Daddy. If you remember that Adam Sandler movie. But they ended up on a Disney series called The Sweet Life of Zack and Cody. They lived in a hotel and then they moved on to a cruise ship and it was called The Sweet Life on Deck. But of course they've grown up now. They're adults. And so one of them, Dylan, is in this movie. It's really Hannah Marks who is the main character in this. And I think she either helped write it or produce it. She's in the back end of this movie as well. You also have Liana DeLiberato playing the girlfriend of Dylan Sprouse. This movie would probably be much better if A, I were not 48 years old and I were a kid. And B, if Booksmart had not come out last year. This one looks a lot like it's trying to emulate Booksmart. And while I imagine these were in production around the same time, Booksmart is a better movie. That one was a really charming movie that managed to walk the line between decent behavior in high school and, of course, the naughty behavior that kids get into. The problem with this movie is just everybody is constantly smoking pot or jeweling it up. There's four or five scenes where they're in the house parties, where they're drinking heavily. And you know, like when I watched Big Time Adolescence last week, I thought that that was appropriate because it showed that there was this one guy who was a bad influence on him. This movie reminds me like it was made by people who constantly smoked dope and jeweled up in high school and drank heavily and had sex all the time. And they just assume everybody did. And that's just not the way it works. So part of it, again, I'm not the right age for this. I'm 48 years old. This was not my cup of tea. It just more annoyed me than anything. And at times there's some genuine moments between the two girls as they forge a friendship. But overall, it's not enough to make me like the movie. So I'm still saying it totally sucks.
It sucks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Little Fires Everywhere and Baghdad Central. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue to talk about some on-demand options. One thing let me just address not the elephant in the room, but the tiger in the room first. I'm going to be talking about a couple Hulu series in this segment. And I know everybody right now is talking about Tiger King. I'm sorry. I have to admit, I resisted that one. This was something I heard it come out and I heard all the buzz about it. I saw it's number one on Netflix. I looked at it and I said, I don't want to devote 7 hours to this. So I dragged my feet. And finally I said, doggone it. I better at least sit down and start watching the series to see what it is because I know I'm going to be asked about it. So I did start watching Tiger King and it's bonkers crazy. It is basically a Florida Man BuzzFeed article that is expanded into a 7-part docuseries by Netflix. It shows the life of these people who own these big cats and have these sanctuaries and just the bizarre cult behavior of not just some of them, but apparently all of them. And there's skullduggery involved, like murder for hire and guns and explosions and crocodiles and tattoos and mullets and arms being ripped off. So it's a crazy series. I'm not going to review it right now. Maybe I'll talk about it next week. Because I'm only partway through it. I came late to the party for that, but everyone's talking about it, and now's the time to watch it, because half the country's at home, at least. But not right now. I'm going to be talking about something else. The one I'm going to be talking about is Little Fires Everywhere. Reese Witherspoon and Kerry Washington star as conflicting suburban women in an upscale Cleveland suburb in the 90s.
So rent is $300 a month.
So you rented it to her on the spot, just like that. Do you even know anything about this woman? And then you ask her to come work in our house?
It is a beautiful thing to know that your actions can affect another person's life. All mothers struggle. Money hides it. But you can't put a price on a mother's love.
So is it just you and your mom?
Mm-hmm.
She hides stuff, just like everybody else.
What's funny about this, first of all, before I talk about anything, is it takes place in Shaker Heights, Ohio. And I'm not from Cleveland. I'm from Columbus, but my family's from Cleveland. So I've been to Cleveland. I've been to Shaker Heights. My father grew up in Cleveland Heights, which is, I think, it borders Shaker Heights. And Shaker Heights is a nice little area, but they make it sound really idyllic. And I don't ever remember it being that idyllic. Maybe it's just the rich part of Shaker Heights. I know Shaker Heights is something. There was the battle for Shaker Heights, that Project Greenlight movie. Like what, like 15, 20 years ago? So it's shown up in films before. It just kind of surprises me because I never thought of Shaker Heights as being the super wealthiest, but maybe it is. Who knows? There's areas in everybody's hometown that's like that, that has a reputation for being highfalutin and fancy and expensive. But there are lesser areas of that. I guess you could say lesser economic, socioeconomic areas. But anyways, in Little Fires Everywhere, it's not Desperate Housewives, because that's really not what it is, but it has that blue velvet, the weird stuff that happens underneath the shiny veneer of such a nice idyllic place, that there's skeletons in everybody's closet. And the whole thing is Kerry Washington, she shows up with her daughter and she's a single mom. And Reese Witherspoon kind of takes her under her wing and rents her a house. But she's got this baggage and she's got this history that starts to bubble over. And then they start butting heads and they start having problems. And of course, you learn more and more as the series goes on about their backstories. And really, it's like any sort of, you know, suburban Peyton Place kind of Desperate Housewife, everybody's got a skeleton in their closet type movie or series. And it works on that level, but any of these films or TV series, everything that happens is a result of a ton of just terrible decisions. And some of them are really stupid decisions. And I can't even go into the detail because it's not even, I don't even know if it's revealed yet, but there's stuff that happens and I'm like, well, that was just a really dumb decision. And that person didn't put enough safeguards in place for this. And, you know, this was a silly idea. And there's a lot of things that a little bit of forethought could have saved the day on some of this stuff. It also shows some just really terrible parenting. I get triggered by that, I admit, because I think I'm a pretty good parent. I think we've raised really good kids. And we didn't have some of the problems that you see in these teen movies or TV shows. And I'm like, well, if you just would have handled this proper when they were two, you wouldn't have this problem now. And, you know, maybe I've been blessed by just having good kids. I like to think that we have an open and honest family that we work with, whereas these people are sometimes more worried about appearances and how you should act rather than just how you act. But the Little Fires Everywhere is a great way to sit there in your home if you're stuck and you can't go anywhere and to watch people's lives be a bigger train wreck and dumpster fire than your own. And that's kind of, I think, the appeal to something like this. There's parts I like about it, parts I don't. So I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks, but it is not necessarily always my cup of tea.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Baghdad Central. In November 2003, a former Iraqi detective searches for his missing daughter amid the American occupation.
Iraq needs Iraqi policemen.
Men like you, Inspector.
My daughter, she is missing.
Sultan! Sultan!
Join me.
You will be a collaborator.
I will work for them. For as long as it takes me to find Sultan. And then we will leave. She has been working for the Americans, which now is a very dangerous thing to be doing.
Women in today's Iraq have a habit of disappearing.
This is a 6-episode series event, and it has all dropped this weekend on Hulu. So you can watch all 6 episodes, as opposed to like Little Fires Everywhere, which they're squeezing that one out once a week. You got all 6 episodes of Baghdad Central, and it's a Hulu original. But it's one of those where it acquired it from something. It's like the British programming you see on Netflix. Baghdad Central, I believe, I think it's a British show. It originally aired on Channel 4 in Britain. And that's important because for a movie that's about the Iraqis during the American occupation or very early during the American occupation, the fact that it's not an American-made show, I think it gives it a little bit more of a distance. Even now, almost 20 years later, anything you make post 9/11 world, it's very hard for an American series to make that without sliding into overly critical or sliding into overly jingoistic approaches, because we're Americans and we're very close to that. But the fact that this is made by the British and it's about the Iraqis, you can get a little bit more of that on the ground perspective. And I know there's a lot of people that say, oh, well, you know, I don't want to see the America's great or whatever. And I mean, fine, you can have your views of the country, but you can't ignore the fact of that the Iraqis are going to look at us differently than we look at ourselves. And I think that gives it that perspective. And one of the characters is a British expatriate who's working in Iraq. And so it gives the British perspective. It gives the Iraqi perspective. I think that's important. And I think people need to see more of it. And the series itself shows the worth of world cinema, because if all you do is watch American movies, you think that that's how the world looks in America, and that's not the case. And this movie, the series isn't even about America. It's just in that backdrop. And what the average person who wasn't in Iraq in 2003, which is most of America, they don't know what it was like to be a person in Iraq. Not just, you maybe you've heard stories of the soldiers who've been deployed and are doing their job, but you don't know what it's like to be in an occupied territory. And most Americans have no idea what that's like, because America's not been occupied since the British did in the 1700s. So it's an interesting perspective. It really gets into the politics of the region, which again is also important, at least in terms of perspective. I found this series very interesting and sort of like a reverse Homeland. You know, something where you can see it from this guy's perspective, where he's an old Iraqi police officer and he's just trying to find his daughter, but he's unraveling a bunch of things that the Americans are only peripheral to. So yeah, that's worth checking out. It's on Hulu right now, the whole series, all 6 episodes. Baghdad Central kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the box office. And the Home Cinema Roundup featuring 1917 and Frankenstein, the true story. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the show with some box office, which, oh, I know this is sort of punching a man when he's down, but let's look at what the box office was last week. Last week, of course, we know that theaters all shut down around the country. Officially, the box office was only about $3,900 for the entire weekend. The only one that got released and was reported was a movie called Phoenix, Oregon, which I don't know what that was. It made $3,842 for the weekend. Total gross. And then there was a movie called Lost in America, which made $78. And that was it. Nothing. Money is not being made. The last daily box office that was reported was Thursday, before everything got shut down for good. And the last daily box office onward won with $33,000. and then nothing, nothing for the rest of the week. It's been shut down by the COVID-19 pandemic. So nothing is happening in the box office, and it was dwindling, and then finally hit March 20th, which was last weekend, and nothing, you can't go to the theaters. Everything's online now. If you look at the top 10 from going into last weekend onward, Invisible Man, Bloodshot, those three, top three, are now available on demand. You can get them yourself. I don't know where I Still Believe is. I don't know if that's been released on demand, but The Call of the Wild has been on demand. The Hunt, Sonic the Hedgehog, The Way Back, and Bad Boys for Life is coming out on DVD and Blu-ray in a couple weeks. So all of this stuff that is in the top 10, most of the movies in the top 10 are already on demand because they can't make money at the box office because it's not there. And that's tough and that sucks, but that's the way the world is. And that's what we have to do. We have to hunker down and survive this, and we will. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Two movies this week I am going to be talking about in the home cinema. The first one is 1917. Two soldiers in World War I are tasked with bringing a critical message to the front lines during an invasion.
You have a brother in the 2nd Battalion.
Yes, sir.
They're walking into a trap. Your orders are to deliver a message calling off tomorrow morning's attack. If you fail, it will be a massacre.
We've got orders to cross here.
That is the German front line.
Hold back!
If we're not clever about this, no one will get to your brother.
Of course, I thought this was going to win the Oscar, but ended up Parasite did. This one, it's not my favorite movie of the year, but it's a very well-done movie. It's directed by Sam Mendes, and it's effective. It's one of those that probably should have been seen on the big screen, but you lost your chance long before the coronavirus came in. But it is now available on home video, and it still looks great on home video. The key with this one is that one of those one-shot movies. Now, there's some cuts you can find, very clear cuts in the movies, but there's other ones that if you've watched enough films and you've watched enough of these one-shot movies, you can see where they're hidden edits and or where somebody passes in front of a camera and they've hidden an edit there. There's, of course, a lot of special effects in this movie that are done to attain the single shot look. Now, of course, the movie itself, it's a very good movie. It's a good look at the different elements of World War I and, you know, sort of like feeling like you're sitting duck. But also it juxtaposes beautiful countryside of gorgeousness right next to horrible horrors of war. And it shows how that took place in Europe. There was great beauty right next to great suffering. And it's an on the ground look at World War I, maybe not as violent or as horrible as it could be, but that's not the point of the film. There are some bonus features on the Blu-ray, which includes how Sam Mendes put it together and looking back at the Allied forces in the making of and the score. But I think the most interesting stuff is the visual effects and the way the movie was assembled and put together as a film and as a narrative and making everything look as seamless as possible. So I'm going to have to say 1917 is a great film. It's worth watching. If you haven't seen it, get it on DVD, rent it online, you know, order it or whatever. I know you can get special features online nowadays in addition to just the feature itself, but it's definitely worth checking out. I'm going to say it totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
The next release I want to talk about is Frankenstein, The True Story. This TV miniseries gives an alternate version of the Frankenstein legend.
The new science offers power, and power terrifies them.
What kind of power?
Power over death.
This is just the beginning.
It's unholy.
Wake up! We're going to burn the misshapen creature. Burn, traitor! Burn, Henry Clovell! You want to get rid of him just as much as I do, you hypocrite.
It's from Shout Factory or Scream Factory. They alternately release like cheesy 80s stuff, and they do a lot of horror movies and more genre-filled stuff. But they also dig back farther than just the 80s, although they've been focusing on a lot of 80s releases lately and some 90s releases. Like they did the Urban Legend movies and they did Pet Sematary 2. I covered that a couple weeks ago. Frankenstein, The True Story is a TV movie. It's a miniseries event. It was two episodes. So the total running time for the entire film itself is about 3 hours. It's like 3 hours and 6 minutes. But there is an introduction, and of course they have the credits before each episode and the ending. And of course there's the next time on Frankenstein, the true story. It's not a true story. For those who don't know, Frankenstein is a story that was written by Mary Shelley back in 1818, I think, is when it was published. It's actually a fantastic book. I've read the book. It's my favorite. It's my, if you classify monster inspirations, like I've read Bram Stoker's Dracula. I'm not a big fan of Bram Stoker's writing for Dracula. I don't like the approach he takes. I've read The Invisible Man. The Invisible Man's actually pretty good. The original H.G. Wells story. It's better than War of the Worlds. It's also better than Robert Louis Stevenson's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. But if you talk about where the original stories come from, Frankenstein's my favorite. And I think it has a lot to say. And one of the things that's neat about this is, although it does the true story, it's not exactly the story from the book, but it draws from the book. And one of the things it does draw from the book is the fact that the monster is not just some crazy brute. The monster is intelligent and can speak and can reason. And that's one of the things you miss. As great as Boris Karloff was in the original Frankenstein, Frankenstein was not just the monster. It was something that was very articulate. And they tap into that with this one. Now, it's also got a fantastic cast. James Mason's in it. He plays Dr. Polidori, who's sort of this rival to Frankenstein. You also have Jane Seymour, who doesn't show up until the second part, actually. At first, I thought she was Elizabeth, but she's not. But she's, of course, you know, young in her career. Back in the days, like, this is, like, right around the time she did, like, that Live and Let Die movie with James Bond, where she's almost so young and, like, in her 20s pretty that you don't recognize her. Because I grew up knowing who she was, but then, of course, I mean, she did Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman in the 90s and really galvanized herself as a TV star then. But her younger days, this was when she was sort of younger in her model days. What I like about this movie is it does have some, like I said, the great cast, John Gielgud and Agnes Moorehead. It also has Tom Baker, the fourth Doctor Who. The one thing that I do like about the movie is while it's not a, it's a horror original story, but with the original Frankenstein, there's a lot of costume drama elements to it. It does tend to be a period piece, and that early 19th century flamboyance that you have in that first section of the movie, the first part is very much like that. It gets darker in the second part, and there's some goofy special effect scenes because it's a movie from the 70s that's made for TV. But it's fascinating because it does have some pretty shocking violence to it. And there's stuff that they really take some care to cut around so they don't show. I mean, early 70s TV, you couldn't show even what you show now, but certainly didn't have the graphic and gore elements that they would have had now. But there's some pretty shocking stuff, especially in the second part. And I'm like, hey, bravo. That was pretty impressive in terms of where they went with it. Certainly the second part is better than the first part. And it does follow the Frankenstein story pretty well. And I think that's why it goes for that true story angle, because it's the true version of Frankenstein that was originated by Mary Shelley, although they do take some liberties and add some elements from the old Universal Monster movies. So it's a neat movie. It's a little long, but that's because it's, you know, 3 hour miniseries. Now the scan of it, it's a new 2K scan, which looks great. It actually has a great look to it, and it's some good sound, better than the clips you're going to find on YouTube of this. And you also have some new interviews with some of the actors, including Jane Seymour, and a new audio commentary with a film historian. So, yes, I'm going to say that Frankenstein, the true story, kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Also out this week, we have The Grudge and the Sylvester McCoy series of Doctor Who Season 3. And that is it for this week. And next week, I will be back talking about more streaming and some more classic releases. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.